This is an interview with Mr. Howard Cook for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project by David Arms at the Fitch High School, Austintown, Ohio, April 6, 1976, at approximately 12:40 p.m. Mr. Cook, could you just give me an idea of your personal background? Where were you born and brought up, that type of thing?
Yes, I was born in Wilmington, Delaware, attended school, high school, Wilmington. From there I went to World War II, enlisted in the United States Coast Guard in 1942, served until April 46th. At that time, returned to Wilmington, and in the fall of 46, entered New York University, spent a year there, and then in 47, I transferred out to Youngstown College, where I married my wife, Mary.
I see. Did you graduate from Youngstown College?
I graduated from Youngstown College in 1950, and after that, I attended Youngstown's Knight School of Law. I received my master's degree from Westminster College in around 63 on a part-time basis.
I see. What did you major in college?
I majored in education, minored in psychology.
I see. You mentioned that you joined the Coast Guard in 1942. Could you just give me an idea why you did this?
Well, prior to the war, I was a lifeguard. Few years as a young man, and I always had the Coast Guard as a goal. I wanted to enter the service. When the war came along, it was the most natural place for me to enlist. And when I went up to enlist, they found I had enlarged tonsils, and they refused me. I never had any trouble with this in my life, so I went home, and then within a day, I made arrangements how my tonsils out, and within a week, I had a hemorrhage, and within a month, I went back. This was in Philadelphia. So I went to the Coast Guard enlistment room, and he said I was too late, the enlistments were closed. So I went across the hall, ready to join the Marine Corps, when they came over and said, since they promised me, they'd take me. And of course, I went to Manhattan Beach training station. And during my Coast Guard experience, I served at Sandy Hook, New Jersey, aboard the USS General W.P. Mitchell and General W.P. Richardson, troop transport. And I was discharged from Ellis Island, New York.
What was your job on these ships? What were you trained for?
I got the rating storekeeper first, second, well, in reverse, I was storekeeper third, second, first class.
I see.
I was discharged storekeeper first class.
I see. So you're basically a storekeeper your time in the Coast Guard.
Right, storekeeper and gunner.
I see.
Right.
After you got out, then you went to school under the GI Bill, was that it?
Correct.
And you transferred to Youngstown College at the time.
College, right.
I see. Now, when did you become interested in becoming a commissioned officer?
Well, at the end of my senior year, about May 1950, I went to the Marine Corps Reserves and inquired about a direct commission. At that time, they said they had no program, but to enlist and through a program, you could attain a commission. Being an old soldier, I knew to get what I had to get before I got in. And of course, you remember 1950, the Korean War broke out, and these engineers that I was applying for went directly to Korea. So I didn't enlist in the Marine Corps, but waited, and in June, the National Guard of Ohio activated the 177th Anti-Aircraft Gun Battalion, and I went down, inquired, and I did get a commission as second lieutenant, and was their first battalion administrative assistant.
So you didn't actually have any training or education in the gunnery field or anything, is that true? Other than being a gunner aboard ship, you hadn't had any formal training?
No, I qualified on the small arm weapons in the Coast Guard.
I said, what kind of initial training did you receive from the National Guard to qualify you for the post?
Well, I must say that the Adjutant General in those days was very strict, and for any promotions, we had to attend the service schools. You mm-hmm. couldn't accept correspondence course. So I attended the basic officer course at Fort Bliss, Texas, and I returned for an advanced course, for a refresher course, 58, and in 60 I went to career advanced course.
I see.
Fort Bliss, Texas.
Now you say you're the first administrative assistant. What did this entail? What kind of a job was this you're speaking of?
Well, this was a same as a full-time adjutant in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
However, you got paid through the state funding, and you were not on active duty. You did get paid for your drills you attended in the 2 week summer field training.
Mm-hmm.
It's civilian capacity.
I see. So you worked 5 days a week as a civilian?
Right. I was the adjutant. And on drill night and summer camp, I was the adjutant. That's one thing. That's one.
I see. Now, how many officers were there at the time down at the Christie Armory?
At the beginning?
Yes.
We had a very skeleton crew. It was right after World War II and the Korean conflict upon us, and this made the recruitment very limited. Example, we had our firing battery to fire a 9mm gun. To go to camp with a strength of 40 men.
Mm-hmm.
They had to man two 90mm gun with a 584 radar and all the other equipment. It was quite a remarkable job they did.
Now, and then the regular Army, how many people would man one of these guns, for instance?
Well, battery would be, but the battery, the 90mm battery would be around 100, 150 men.
So you were shorthanded, to say the least.
Say the least. Amazing.
What other units do you remember being there at the Army at the time you?
Well, we were there. The 37th Division had two units there, and of course they were called up for the Korean
mm-hmm.
conflict, and they left Youngstown in, I believe, late 51 or early 52. I can't recall. I know we had a parade and we took them to the station. And so that left us the headquarters battalion and the A battery, the 177th.
Mm-hmm.
B battery was in Alliance, Ohio. C battery was in Steubenville, Ohio. And D battery was in Warren, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
However, they did start the Ohio Defense Corps,
mm-hmm.
which were which was manned by many ex servicemen, which age now did not permit their active participation in the reserve units.
I see. So, besides yourself, how many other people were there on a full-time basis?
Full-time basis. For a battalion, there was two full-time, and for each battery, there was one full-time man.
I see. What was their responsibility during the 5 working days of the week?
Well, on the battalion level, of course, was to receive, disseminate higher headquarters directives.
Mm-hmm.
To take care of personnel files, payrolls,
mm-hmm.
To plan, of course, for weekly drills at that time, to plan summer field training, to get out training schedules, promotions, etc. On a battery level, of course, the administrator there must take care of all unit supply,
mm-hmm.
take care of property books, do the administration as a first sergeant, records, personnel files, carry through battalion directives, etc.
I see. In the particular battery, the 177 you were attached, were you the only officer in the unit, or how many other officers were there?
On the full-time duty?
No, just the reserve.
No, we, on the headquarters, mm-hmm. headquarters battalion, offhand, I said we had 10 to 12 officers. Commander, exec, 3, 2, 1, liaison officer, communication officer, about 10 officers.
I see. And about how many enlisted were there at the time? You have
and a headquarters battery, I'd say 30, 35 men at the time.
I see. Now, out of these people that were there, about what percentage would you say actually got called up for the Korean conflict?
Well, as you know, in the National Guard, you cannot be called up individually.
I see.
Your unit must be called up.
Mm-hmm.
Our unit was not called up. The 179th.
So you were just telling me on the how the unit is called up.
Oh, yes, okay. So in the Korean conflict, the 37th Division went, took two of the units out of the Army. The 179th, which was the sister battalion,
mm-hmm.
177th in Cleveland, they didn't go.
Mm-hmm.
The 180th in Dayton, Ohio, which was the first battalion activated back in probably 47, 48, they did go to Korea.
Nice.
So only one 90mm battalion out of the state went to Korea.
I see.
But went on active duty.
I see. Now, what was the determination on them going? Do you happen to remember why did one battalion go and not the other?
Well, selection through Department of Army of their, mm-hmm. their training, the length of time of their existence, their TO&E, their manpower and mm-hmm. qualification in their MOSs. They were in being mm-hmm. 3 or 4 years before we were activated.
I see. So after the Korean conflict, or about that period, did you find it difficult to recruit people to the Guard or anything of that?
Oh, yes. During the Korean conflict, it was very difficult. Like I said, we'd go to a summer camp with a firing battery of 35, 40 men.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when the Korean conflict started, we lost people who initially enlisted with us.
Uh-huh.
This goes through the whole trend mm-hmm. at Korea, after that armistice, then we start to fill up with MSDs and officers. Then came the, I don't know if it's order or not, the Berlin crisis, mm-hmm. and we people, don't forget all these people, most all these people had military background, military service, they were obligated.
Uh-huh.
And you'll get that certain core that would jump out, afraid to be called active duty. And after that, the Cuban crisis, that core that would jump out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, after that, the Vietnam, when the reserve was not called for the first time
uh-huh.
to active duty for a war, it became a sanctuary,
mm-hmm.
all reserve forces, practically. Then, of course, the enlistments started to come in, and we had waiting lists a mile long.
Mm-hmm.
One of our main difficulty was to be sure that waiting list was very well policed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the battalion commander's death if then that his units that the full-time personnel would take bribes or
mm-hmm.
do favors and put a person ahead of them.
Yeah.
You know.
I see. So there was quite a bit of, was it happening or was there a big program to make sure it wasn't happening?
It was happening. I find that most laws are a result of something that happened, not something that will happen.
I see.
And it was happening, and not in this area,
uh-huh.
to my knowledge. It happened in larger cities, and it happened in individual cases.
I see.
But it became a very serious problem
uh-huh.
for a commander to deal with.
I see. So basically, recruiting has been a problem, except during that period.
Yes.
Why would you think that an individual would join the National Guard versus another reserve unit, such as the Army Reserve unit?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, really. I don't think the person would be that much knowledgeable to do what I'm saying they would do.
Mm-hmm.
That is basically, in the Guard, you must be called a unit,
mm-hmm.
where an Army Reserve, the Navy Reserve, I guess the Marine Reserve, you can be called up individually.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the recruit was that sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
Per se, now maybe individually they were, but per se, I think they were attracted. Maybe their friends belong, maybe the type of unit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people don't care to belong to infantry or engineer, and or an aircraft, the 90mm. From there we went to a 40mm an aircraft. It's fun to work around. You shoot at RCATs,
mm-hmm.
you know, planes and. It's challenging. It's more challenging with radars, things of this nature that attract you. So I think that has some input, the type of equipment we had.
I see. Would you say that the individual that joins the Guard, have you found that he's a stereotype type of person? Or
At first, the individual joined the guard, and I say back in 51, 2, 3, were mostly all ex-servicemen who had a real sincere love for the service. However, not that sincere to go remain on active duty, but want to be part of that avocation. This is the type we're getting. These type of people would come back on Saturday morning to work, come in on Monday afternoons to work, as opposed to the Vietnam type. They were there for one reason, not to go to the military on active duty. They were there for that 2 hour or 4 hour drill. When that was over, it was over. And goodbye, and I'll see you in a month. That's the way it was. Right. So you had two different types of people. And of course, although we had a low strength in the early days, in the 50s, the people we had did so much work, they made the full strength battery of 200 men look bad.
I see.
No question about it.
So definitely the type of individual that belonged back in those days, or the type of unit you had in those days, was much more beneficial than...
It was a revocation, no question about it.
Do you think that might have to do, too, with the changing attitude towards the military that there appears to be in the United States today?
Well, the change of attitude now, who's changing attitude, that's the point, too. I'm not prepared at this time to really give an opinion. I still think we have the core of people who believe in the military and who really enjoys as an avocation. I really believe this. I think the other type are being weeded out, and they're falling by the roadside now that the Vietnam War is cranked down, and you don't hear this so much anymore.
I see.
Maybe it's for my own protection to stay out of the military. I don't know.
What about after you say you were the first full-time advisor down there?
Administrative assistant. We had regular Army advisors attached to us.
Okay, now you had regular Army advisors attached. What was their job?
Well, their main job was to check our training, go over the training schedules, see if it complied with regulation, to assist any way they can or they could, helping us to prepare for federal inspections, to take your ATT test and summer field training, to give general advice to young officers and procedures, and even in the command. They were a great help at the general rule.
So these were regular active duty Army officers.
Right.
About how many were there to, let's say, the Armory down here?
How many to the Army?
How many were assigned?
Well, you have one assigned to battalion with
a
sergeant usually. And then they would rotate every 2 or 3 years. There'd be a tour and a tour program by their particular what's the term I use? The career management branch.
It's
part of their experience with the National Guard as to develop them in their overall career as an Army officer.
I see.
To appreciate the reserve and guard if they were called up into their organization at a later time.
I see. Oh. Okay, now, how long did you stay down there as administrative assistant?
Well, I stayed there as administrative assistant just 2 years. And then I went from there full-time job to the Austintown Fitch High School, 53. And of course, I stayed on the, I was transferred from headquarters to the Executive Officer A Battery, Firing Battery. And a career from there right on through from Executive Officer and through Battalion, through Battery Commander.
Could you be a little bit more specific about that? What type of jobs did you have while you were attached?
Well, I was attached to the, I went to A Battery. I was Executive Officer, so I was in charge of the gunnery, the 90mm gunnery program. And of course, I served under the battery commander, and I was also given additional duties, recreation officer, supply officer, et cetera, et cetera. And then from there, I went to battery commander of A Battery. And after serving that capacity, I went back to headquarters as liaison officer, which, of course, duties was to communicate with higher headquarters at summer field training, things of this nature. And from there, I went to battalion training officer, S3. Trying to train officer responsible for all the training of the battalion. And from there to the executive officer and the battalion commander.
I see.
And during this time, we went from the 177th and the aircraft gun battalion 90mm to the 137th artillery automatic weapons to the 437th military police battalion.
I see. So actually you ended up being battalion commander of a military police battalion.
Right, that's the rise of April 60, I was battalion commander here in Youngstown.
Here in Youngstown. Can you relate any interesting experiences as you were battalion commander?
The rise of 68? Well, I remember it very well because that was the first year at Elsintown Finch in 53,
uh-huh.
and we had a week off for Easter vacation.
Uh-huh.
So Monday, around noon, I went down to YMCA where I play handball quite regularly. And I played about 2 o'clock. I came into the dressing room, and two outsiders came in and said two policemen were shot on Hillman Street. And I got dressed and immediately went up to the armory. I called the adjutant general, and he directed me to go down to Mayor Flass's office and wait there.
Mm-hmm.
That was the afternoon, Monday afternoon, and I returned home Saturday night about 9 o'clock. Of course, in the meantime, the adjutant general, the governor, ordered up to our battalion,
uh-huh.
and we took our prearranged dispositions throughout the city. Things were going on quite well until on a Tuesday. Probably we all go home Wednesday afternoon, but Tuesday in the afternoon, about 4 o'clock, some white boys from other outskirts came into town on Hillman Street, and as they were driving down the street, they got scared, and people start to crowd them, and they put their foot on the accelerator, locking down a few people, not hurting them, and they sped off towards South High School. In the meantime, one of our patrolling jeeps was coming up, and the people were so frustrated that they stopped the jeep, pulled the drivers out, took weapon from the driver, turned the jeep over, and gasoline, a 5 gallon gasoline can caught fire. I arrived on the scene while the gasoline can was still burning. The fire truck came, and at the time they start throwing rocks at the fire truck, and our sergeant shot a fire and a volley in the air, and that stopped that. It's amazing, it's been documented National Guard magazine, and this was the only shot fired
mm-hmm.
in Iraq in 68.
Hmm.
April 68, and one shot was fired.
Hmm.
Of course, we calmed down the residents, and nothing happened from that point. We did catch two white boys at South Fieldhouse, and of course, the main thing was to return to the parents. But this here, a little incident like this, kept us there another 4 or 5 days.
I see. So this is actually the only call-up that you had as battalion commander?
No, the rise of 68, the penitentiary.
I see.
When it burned down the Ohio State Penitentiary, we went down there for 2 weeks.
Now, did something like this count as your 2 weeks of active duty, or did you still have to go on your two weeks?
This is state duty.
I see.
This is state duty, nothing to do with your 2 weeks.
Or training.
Training.
So you still had to go on your 2 weeks for training after that.
Right. In fact, after April, I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky for 2 weeks. And at that time, they had a little problem here for a day or so, but nothing, any consequence. I wasn't called back.
I see.
I went down to the Command General Staff College summer course.
I see. Now, when you do go to classes like this, mainly they're Army training federal schools, they aren't. The National Guard doesn't have any schools of their own, is that it?
The National Guard has OCS, state
uh-huh.
OCS. From that point on, these schools are all funded, they're all programmed or run by the regular Army.
Mm-hmm.
The attendants of the school are regular Army personnel, National Guard personnel, Army Reserve personnel,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes your ally services, Navy, depending on the type of program, Marine Corps. Even regular Army are assigned to these schools to satisfy their particular school at that level.
I see. In the history that you remember of the Armory down here, has it been a situation where the National Guard has participated in civic activities in the area?
Well, if you take me back, I'm sure they have. I know they have participated in all the parades and put on demonstrations of this nature. I'm sure there have been other detailed information, but I can't recall at the moment.
I see. How about civic projects such as cleaning up parks or things like this? Are they
Well, our battalion wasn't equipment-wise geared to making ballparks or fixing up the playgrounds. I know that the engineers and the Marine Corps had, and the engineers and the Army Reserve over here, we weren't equipment-wise oriented to do this type of thing. I know that since I have left, they have gone out, and this ecology thing has gone out and assisted in cleaning up rivers or lakes or ponds or debris. I know I've seen this, but I wasn't part of it at the time.
I see. How does your family feel about your participation in the National Guard?
Well, I never had any objection from my wife or my daughter. We had a very good relationship with them, and in conjunction with the Guard, never had any problems. Gone away to school, always went away to school, which ran 4 to 6 months. And the wife was always understanding, and had a very, very good experience here. On the other hand, some enlisted men officers had to get out of the Guard because of this schooling criteria.
I see.
They just couldn't get away because of their employer or because of the family problems.
I see. In your experience, though, if you had to do it all over again, would you do it this way, or would you do it any other way?
Oh, it's difficult. How far back? What I experienced now, if I had to go back, I'd go back to ninth grade in high school, and I prepare for the academy. And I'd like to probably be a career man only through the academy.
I see.
What I see now. I think this would be in line with my particular likes and tastes. However, the way I did do it, I've been very fortunate. I've been very, very lucky, although I took advantage of opportunities and didn't qualify myself scholastically and all that, but I've been very fortunate.
I see.
I feel to attain the rank I've attained.
I see. Is there anything that you'd like to add that I might not have asked you at all, Mr. Cook? I understand there's a difference in the manner you're commissioned in the National Guard other than in the other services. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yes, well, of course, you must have the basic qualifications as you would for any service to be a commissioned officer. However, in the Guard, you're commissioned twice. You're first commissioned by the state of Ohio. The governor gives you commission to the rank you're coming in with. Now, this is contingent on federal recognition. In other words, you come into the Guard as a second lieutenant, commission second lieutenant. But since the federal government pays financially, that is all your pay that you receive belonging to the organization, plus all the equipment is given by the federal government, as opposed to the state furnishes the armories, then you cannot draw pay unless you are federally recognized. And when you are federally recognized, it means that you are a reserve officer in the Army of the United States, so that you may come but go back and forth from the Guard and Reserves.
I see.
If you're not federally recognized, then the governor will withdraw his commission, and then, of course, you will not be commissioned.
I see.
In the state of Ohio.
Now, how do you get paid on this, or how has it changed throughout the years?
It changed within the last 6 months.
Uh-huh.
Up until 6 months ago, you get paid after every quarter, every 3 months, and of course, at the end of 2 weeks summer field training, there'd be a pay table. But now, as I understand it, I say understand it because I'm not on an assignment. I'm attached right now, so for points, I'm not getting paid. That now they get paid every month.
I see.
And how this is going to work out is brand new, so I have no
Now, where did it comes by check? Is that it? Your pay comes by check?
Yes, pay, drill pay comes by check. Usually, summer field training pays in cash. However, it has been checked on occasion depending on the financial resources available when you're doing the training.
I see. Now, where does this come from?
Well,
do you remember where it's mailed from?
The pay?
Yes.
That's a good question. Well, the guard, you get your pay from the Columbus, out of the capital. In the reserve, I can't recall.
So when you're activated, for example, for the 68 riots and everything, you're paid a daily wage, is that correct? Or?
You're paid equivalent to your rank, mm-hmm. daily wage, not including subsistence and quarters.
I see.
It's basic pay.
I see.
But, yeah.
Now, what, you're never reimbursed for subsistence and quarters? Or?
Not on state duty.
Not on state duty.
I would say never, but as a general rule, of course you are lodged at the armory,
uh-huh.
fed by the state, so you have no cause really to...
Even the officers are?
Oh, yes.
I see. Now, how is the reserve officer, when you go on your 2 weeks training and everything, how are you fed there? Are you fed right out of the general mess, or do you have your own mess?
Yeah, we're fed out of the general mess. Of course, we might pay for each meal as designated by the Department of the Army for any officer on active duty.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate it.